It wasn't all that long ago that a company did the unthinkable. In mid-2018, Apple was the first company to ever hit a $1 trillion market cap. In 2020, they hit $2 trillion, and now they're more than $3 trillion. Apple is now worth more than the combined value of 200 companies in the S&P 500. They're worth more than all of the companies listed on the stock market in France combined. They're bigger than the entire economy of France. They're bigger than the stock market of Germany and China and the UK. They're worth more than the GDP of Italy and Canada. Right now, there are five U.S. tech companies that are members of the $1 trillion club: Apple, Microsoft, Alphabet, Amazon, and NVIDIA. And today on Dumb Money, we've done the math and have a prediction of who will be the first $10 trillion company. And it's not one of the current top five.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This is Dumb Money Live.
There, Dave here, along with Chris and Jordan. We are Dumb Money. Welcome to Dumb Money Live. We are nowhere near the $1 trillion club here, but we are closing in on 100,000 subscribers. We need your help. We would love to get to that 100K number by the end of the year. I have no idea if it's even possible. As of this moment, we are just 1,485 subscribers away. I bet you're already subscribed, but I bet you know somebody that would like what we do here who isn't subscribed. So I want to do something a little different. If you will, please take a second, send a text message to the top two people in your messenger app. Tell them to subscribe to youtube.com/dumbmoneylive. We can't do it without your help. Let us know you're on board by smashing the like button. Chris, Jordan, it is great to see both of your faces this morning. Chris, I know you were really bummed with mixing up the time zone and missing the last show. You did so much research for the last show, and it resulted in a pretty bold prediction, the first $10 trillion company. We're going to reveal that and exactly how we got to that number in a minute, but I want to talk for a minute about how big $3 trillion is, because Apple and their $3 trillion valuation, I think it's hard to wrap your head around just how big $3 trillion really is. So here's what I'd like to think about. Imagine your bank account has $1 billion in it. $3 trillion would be enough for a $1 million bank account for every person in the city of Dallas, plus Denver, plus Detroit, plus Des Moines, plus Dayton, plus some other smaller D cities. And then there's still nearly $20 billion left over. That is $3 trillion. So $10 trillion would be all of those plus $1 million for everyone in the cities of Los Angeles, Chicago, Houston, Phoenix, and Philadelphia. It is an insane number. And Chris, you think that there is a company that can hit $10 trillion within the decade?
Yes, by 2030, I never thought I would say this. And quite honestly, in, you know, the 35 years I've been investing, I've never felt this excited about an investing opportunity before. It's almost inconceivable how large this opportunity is. And, you know, I've been talking about this a lot the past year, and I think there are some people finally starting to catch up to my thesis. As you guys mentioned last week, there was a tweet about it, but I have a more measured take at what I think is going to be the first $10 trillion company. In fact, I don't even think it's that speculative of a prediction. I think it's almost an assumption that this is going to happen. The company I'm talking about is Tesla, and it might not be what you think. It's not about Tesla's automotive business. It's not about Tesla's energy business. I want to share a stat with you guys that is much more interesting than that $3 trillion stat, okay? So by 2030, there will be a global human talent shortage of more than 85 million people, okay? Now, left unchecked, that 2030 talent shortage is likely to result in $8.5 trillion in unrealized annual revenue, okay? Okay, so that said, I'm going to share my analysis that shows you how the Optimus humanoid robot that Tesla is working on alone, okay, can get to a valuation of $10 trillion for Tesla without displacing a single human by 2030, okay? So we're not talking about displacing humans. We're talking about simply helping in a very small way to cover a very tiny gap.
A small portion of the global shortage of humans that are expected to need to do something can be replaced by these Optimus humanoid robots.
So of the projected 85 million person global human shortage, okay, in 2030, I'm going to discuss how Tesla's Optimus can help with 1.5 million of those humans, right? Just 1.5 million. That's it. That's how I'm going to get to a $10 trillion market cap for Tesla. And I'm gonna show you how right now. I want to get your guys' opinion on this. I'll tell you where I'm starting. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of sectors and professions that will be disrupted by humanoids. But I'm just going to pick 10, okay? I'm not going to talk about the 50 to 100 I have high conviction in. I'm just going to talk about 10. These are 10 areas where we have job shortages. We have employee shortages currently, okay? So let's just walk through the 10, and I'm going to tell you the average all-in hourly rate, okay, for each of these 10 professions. Now, we're going to start with, and I'm going to also tell you where humanoids can be value added to each of these positions, meaning where humanoids are actually optimal in these positions over humans, even though we're not going to replace humans here, okay? And then I'm going to walk you through financial projections of exactly how I got to that $10 trillion number. So starting with manufacturing assembly line worker, okay? Now think about this. Robots work continuously without safety concerns and absolutely increase the production facility. Production efficiency and the consistency, okay, of those assembly. We're looking at about $25 an hour all-in cost. So these all-in costs include, you know, various forms of insurance and other employee costs, okay? These are all-in. This is not the hourly rate that employee make per hour, but the all-in cost of a company is about $25 an hour on average.
And you're talking manufacturing assembly line that humans are still doing by hand. So like a lot of manufacturing is maybe not a humanoid robot, but it is a machine that is doing a lot of things that are like monitored by a human and quality controlled by a human. But you're talking about the all-in cost, including insurance and all of the things that pile on top of a person's base salary. $25 an hour is your average here.
As much as we have moved to robotics generally, there are tens of millions of jobs that require more humanoid or humans along with those assembly lines. So yes, that's what I'm referring to. We have major shortages there, okay? Especially since the pandemic. Now, we have elderly care assistants. Again, major shortages here, $17 an hour. Now imagine the specialized care, okay? The highly specialized care and continuous assistance that robots can provide in that space. Again, massive shortages coming. Our retail customer service representative, something that we deal with every single day. The potential for extended service hours, consistent customer engagement, which is the dream of every company, right? Reduction in employee theft. And, you know, the biggest nitpick issue we all have these days, having to tip at the register, no more of that, right? No more tipping at the register. So it actually reduces consumer cost as well. Warehouse logistics handlers, And by the way, that was on average. It's getting up to $17.50 an hour is kind of the all-in cost for companies for that job. Warehouse logistics handlers, okay? Robots' ability to work in various conditions without any fatigue is just unreal, all right, for a logistics handler. Average all-in cost is about $21 an hour. By the way, notice that we are not going to discuss any consumer applications of humanoids in this episode. This is purely about the lowest hanging of the lowest hanging fruit of job shortages. Hospitality staff, including hotel concierge, receptionist, all types of hospitality staff. The round-the-clock service capability is something that's badly needed and critical, while, again, also lowering guest costs. No tipping the bad guy anymore, right? All those costs are gone. In fact, Dave, we had dinner last night, right? We had a dinner with our wives last night, and the service was, you know, pretty good. And by the way, as a restaurant owner, it's not like I'm trying to displace any workers, but wouldn't it have been nice? Do you think, was the tip worth the value that we got?
It was an expensive meal. And the tip was very high. The hourly cost for the person who just waited on our table was a very good wage.
You have preferred to save on tip and not tip at all? And we would have had virtually the identical dining experience, right?
Isn't that kind of always the dream? Isn't that what every other country has kind of adopted?
Well, there's still costs there in other countries. But yeah, I mean, yes. I just think that is a... That's a job that eventually is going away, whether we like it or not. But again, we're not talking about displacing workers. We're just talking about the shortages in hospitality. There's massive shortages across hospitality. We're not talking about waiters, okay? We're talking about, you know how many hotels now have basically stopped certain services because they can't find employees?
I mean, if you think about it, we were talking about having a robot perhaps work the front desk at a hotel, but already, like the app... On the Hilton app, you can check in, choose your own room, and get your digital key with like three taps, and you don't ever have to go to the front desk anymore.
There are still edge cases where we need a front desk person, and that could easily be covered by a humanoid, right? Okay, so let's move on. Medical assistant for routine tasks. The ability to handle a super wide variety of specialized tasks would be unbelievably beneficial, right? For medical assistants, for all the routine, repeatable tasks. And that's what we're really focused on, repeatable tasks. That is an area where we have massive job shortages already today, and they're only going to get worse over the next 6 or 7 years. Here's one that seems really obvious, right, guys? Hazardous materials handling, nuclear energy, chemical manufacturing, waste management, dealing with any radioactive materials. This is an area where we have massive job shortages already. It's only going to get worse. There's huge safety concerns. The insurance costs are through the roof. The average hourly rate all in is about $50 an hour in that space. Fast casual food workers, right? The actual food prep itself and the order handling is a repetitive task that, let's be honest, no humans really want to do. These are jobs that we want to grow out of over time. But again, we have such shortages. We don't have to displace humans. No. We're talking about the first 85 million don't need to be displaced. We just have excess demand. But that is definitely a sector where humanoids will fit in right away, early days. They're already being tested in that capacity. Here's another one, security guard, okay? Now, the mobile integrated surveillance ability of humanoids overlaid on top of just the presence of having a security guard is unprecedented, right? Also working in challenging environments, right? And having that 24/7 surveillance ability, digital integrated video live of everything that's happening, having someone remotely being able to see and discuss, having a single human, maybe over 40 to 50 humanoid security guards. Massive operational efficiencies. We're looking at an all-in cost of $20.50, although I know personally, having to hire a lot of these security guards, the cost is actually a lot higher than that. But we're going to be really conservative with all these average cost ranges. Agricultural worker, only an average cost of $17, but it's all about operational consistency and precision in tasks, harvesting, planting, the productivity and the efficiencies from every one of these positions, but especially this one that we would get from a humanoid over a human would just raise the bar significantly. Now, when we think about all these jobs, you could make a case to where a humanoid, due to the efficiencies, we should be able to demand probably a 20 to 40, in some cases 50% premium over the all-in human costs. But for purposes of this exercise, guys, I'm going to make some assumptions that in early days, we're only able to get 75% of the human cost. So we're talking about a 25% cost reduction, even though the humanoids are operating on a much more productive and efficient scale than their human counterparts, okay? So we're talking about filling unfillable jobs, meeting a very tiny portion of the job of the human shortage, and saving companies money over what they pay for their human counterparts to be ultra conservative. We're talking about humanoids on average working 16 hours, so basically two shifts in a 24-hour period. I think that is very doable for the vast majority of these positions. We're talking about the humanoids averaging...
And in that case, you're actually talking about basically one humanoid doing the same output, the same number of hours as two humans would have been able to do. So in a way, you're, you know, the 85 million shortage is cut because you now have more hours available in the day because the humanoids don't need to sleep. Yes. They have a maintenance schedule, but they don't have to just work 8 hours and then have a work-life balance.
No overtime, right, for employers. But not only is there no overtime, because I'm averaging out 16 hours a day, some companies will use these humanoids 24 hours a day. Some won't quite make the 16 hours. But the ones that are able to use them more than 16 hours, I think if you utilize the humanoid for over a certain period of time, I believe you will get discounts on any hours in a day over that time. Now, I should have explained this earlier, but the way humanoids are likely to be deployed to the commercial and industrialized world is not through sale, only through hourly use. So it's like an hourly lease. So the Tesla in this situation would actually be leasing out all-inclusive on an hourly rate to various industry sectors. Tesla would cover the maintenance, the repairs, the servicing. All of that would be inclusive, but the employer would simply pay an hourly rate and likely be required to absorb a minimum number of hours. And if they were to go over that, they're likely to get a discount. So it's like the inverse of paying overtime, right? Because each humanoid is being budgeted at 16 hours a day. And if you happen to have an application that can use them 22 hours a day, then you're willing to give a discount because that's all ancillary, right? Additional revenue for the humanoid manufacturer, which is really fascinating, right, guys? Okay, so let's just work through these numbers. At 17%, at 75% of the weighted average rate, which I believe came out to $22.50 across just those 10 industry sectors, that gives us an hourly rate of $16.88 an hour with a average of 16 work hours in a day. The humanoids will be put to use 350 days of the year. We're allotting some time for replacement, some time for servicing, right? If a humanoid goes down, so we have a little wiggle room there. But that ends up grossing $94,528 per humanoid on an annualized basis. And that is being super conservative at 75% of the human rate. Again, I actually believe we'll be able to get not only full human rate, but in many of these industry sectors, 20 to 40% above human rate because one, we're talking about shortages in humans.
Yeah.
Two, we're talking about much more productive, much more efficient workflow. In addition to that, do you know what I'm not accounting for? I'm not accounting for all of the other expenses that will be saved. So when you think about this, the admin, the level of HR, all right, the liability insurance, there's so many other expenses that are involved with maintaining a
human. Yeah, another big expense would be something like employee turnover that this could solve, right?
Employee turnover, because I believe that we will be in a net, we'll be in a net kind of more demand, significantly more demand than supply for the first decade of humanoids. If at any point a company was not utilizing and wanted to send them back, they would probably be incentivized to send them back so they can be redeployed, right? So
I do want to push back on just one little area here. And that, so you've got a very wide range of applications that you're targeting for this, which I think is fine because they're, you know, they're humanoid robots. We've seen that, you know, with kind of the robotics applications that, you know, maybe one company will create a platform, right? And then you get other companies that sit on top of that platform and create these more customized or more, you know, industry focused, use cases, right? And then you, because you can't have the same, you know, top end software, the top end operating package, you know, picking grapes as you are going to be inserting needles into people's arms or doing, you know, healthcare or something like that. So, you know, well, I think that there is room, and I think you make a good argument that that you could have this wide range of deployment. But I'm starting to think that maybe there's going to be different companies that sit in between as a middleman, right? To where that $95,000 average, maybe, you know, Tesla gets a portion of it. Maybe they get the lion's share. Maybe they get the $60,000. But then there's going to be a company in the middle that's doing the specified training or the, you know, the operating system on top of the base operating system.
Yeah, it almost comes down to how easy
each one of these different robotic applications.
I think you could be right, Jordan, but I think most of the applications that I'm reviewing, at least for the first 10, are fairly repetitive, fairly straightforward in terms of, you know, full direct deployments, meaning in my assumption is based on a 2-year period, probably starting in 2025, when a company such as Tesla or other humanoid companies would start their training. Like they will be training with these various sectors and at least for the big sectors, developing that kind of, you know, AI learning loop, right?
Yeah, I think the bigger, more generalized sectors, I think you may be right on. I think as you start to go down the specialization chain, that then you're going to have smaller companies come in and pick up that training.
Yeah, and I think the more, you know, you said just like a medical assistant that can be trained to do some simple things, that's way different than a humanoid that's doing a full surgery that would require a lot more training.
My reason for bringing that up is that Chris mentioned medical in the list of jobs that he thinks that this could help augment.
Yeah, and I'm talking about probably the same way that our nursing robot does 20 tasks, not even, just constantly all day.
Well, the thing is, it doesn't do any patient care, right?
I know, but I'm saying imagine the humanoid maybe doing 20 or 30 human care, but very routine tasks such as wiping the butt. I know it sounds crazy, or giving a sponge bath, right?
Yeah.
These are tasks that there's massive shortages right now. Nobody wants to do in that, and there's dozens and dozens of tasks like this. They don't want to do them. Cleaning a situation that's toxic, or I can talk about 50 tasks that nobody in that industry wants.
No, I totally agree that these are like the perfect. Yeah, it's a perfect application because it's designed like a human, but it doesn't have judgment. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't care what it's doing.
And I think that when it comes to like, is there a company that sits between the humanoid robotics company and the end use application? Some will have specialized, but I think it really comes down to how well the software is trainable, and are you able to let your Optimus watch some YouTube videos and now it's an expert, or does it have to have some additional hands-on training by someone who, you know, how trainable is it? If it's super trainable, right. So you don't need that, middle
base operating system that that is customizable, you can train on top of. But what's nice about, you know, software is that you train one and you can just copy the training over to as many as, and you don't have to actually train each individual robot. You just have to train one robot really well.
Yeah. Let me just quickly go through the financials just so we're all on the same page. And I'm not pulling this from thin air. For those of y'all watching today, you probably know that we've been investing in private robotics and humanoid companies as well. And we do have some insight into the cost structure of these humanoids, where they are today, where they're headed in the next 24 months. And we're relatively comfortable. I'm relatively comfortable that we'll have about a $40,000 humanoid here in a few years in terms of the production cost for, and I'm not even thinking of someone producing them at scale like Tesla, but just for the generalized production cost. So I'm utilizing a $40,000 figure. Again, this is gross revenue per bot of $94,000 annually based on my assumptions. So the payback period is less than 6 months. It's like a 5 month payback period. So beyond that, and this is a pretty loose estimate, I've estimated that the cost of servicing, maintaining, replacing when there's repairs, and having actual oversight of those humanoids from the manufacturer in terms of monitoring is $10,000 a year. Okay, so that is the ongoing cost. So think about that. We're talking about a 90% margin product here. Per humanoid, $94,000 a year at an ongoing cost of $10,000 a year. So
with nearly unlimited demand, you're only covering a very small portion in your estimate of that potential total addressable market.
So I'm going to get to my in-service number. My in-service number by 2030, and this is assuming that Tesla begins deployment and testing and training in 2025. Now, to be clear, the humanoid company that we're invested in is initiating training and deployment in 2024. So in early next year, our humanoid is going to be deployed and start training with logistics companies. We already know that Amazon is testing humanoids with one of our competing private companies. So this is happening right now. Tesla is a bit behind, and they're bit more measured and differentiated in their approach to their Optimus humanoid. So we're going to assume that their testing doesn't start until 2025. I am estimating that there is a 2-year testing cycle before they start actually manufacturing and producing humanoids for any of these use cases. And I have an assumption that by 2030, or the end of 2030, that of the 85 million humans that we are short in the world, all right, for commercial applications, that the Tesla bot will be able to have 1.5 million in service. Okay, so just 1.5 million humanoids globally. That's it, in service, generating $94,525 a year in gross revenue, puts us at $141 billion a year gross revenue. Okay. So when I look at the operating expenses, it's roughly $12 billion a year. Now remember, we're going to spend about, I think it was like, I don't know, $60 billion. It was a fairly large number, $60 billion to produce these. So Tesla's going to have to take out some debt to produce. So I'm not concerned about that. I think that will be an easy get. With the upkeep. Excuse me, my upkeep was $8,000 a year. It was not $10,000. $8,000 a year. Gross operating expenses of $12 billion across the 1.5 million humanoids in service, with an annual operating profit of $129,792,000,000. Now, if we utilize Tesla's current PE ratio, I think it sits around 80 or so, and I actually think that Tesla is going to have PE expansion once we enter the humanoid era. Okay. Well, let's just say that the PE stays where it is now of 80. That puts you at a $10.38 trillion valuation just for the Optimus division of Tesla. So I laid out what I believe is a it's a speculative but relatively conservative estimate of where Optimus can take Tesla by 2030. And guys,
and that assumes that there's nothing that goes off the rails, that it continues to be a top priority for Tesla, that Elon doesn't do something crazy that sets them back several years, that even by his own estimates, I mean, he's estimating 100 million robots and you're only estimating 1.5. So like, that's a very, I feel like it's a conservative number, a conservative way of getting to a $10 trillion valuation.
But Dave, I want you to understand that the numbers I'm pulling are not coming from thin air. They're based loosely off other numbers.
Other industries. Industries that will use this. It totally makes sense.
Not only that, the production, the utilization, the hours per day, these are all related to other humanoid company estimates that I've read about, that I've discussed with other humanoid engineers. So these are not coming from thin air. This is very doable. This is an execution play. There are a lot of ways that Tesla can mess this up. But again, this is not like autonomous driving where nobody has done it. There's no where we have government regulations that could theoretically push out autonomous driving for 20 to 30 more years. We don't know. That could happen. Yeah. Okay.
There are government regulations that could come in for some of the industries that you're discussing. I think when you're talking
about Jordan,
health applications, things like that, that's going to be
human displacement yet, right? This is accommodating need, right? Government need. To save revenue.
You start talking anything that interacts with other humans, the government could step in real quick.
I think that there's a good chance that the government steps in at some point, but
yeah.
I kind of think that it's going to be the EU that is faster to like put some roadblocks up faster than U.S. Government. Because if you look,
it could be, unless it's seen as a threat to American jobs, at that point, the government could step in pretty quickly, right? And we know. You might know that it's not, right? It's jobs that people don't want to do, but it's still all about the optics. It's all about...
It's not just the jobs that people don't want to do, though. It's jobs that companies need to hire for that there aren't enough humans to do.
Perhaps, yeah. And so that argument can be made, but it can also kind of backfire.
It could, but it's real. You're right. And that will be a debate that will be had. I think it's incomprehensible. The same way that you can't stop a company from making machinery, right? Like we can't stop automotive manufacturers from building all the robots. There's tens of millions of robots deployed that have displaced humans all over the workforce, like all over the global workforce, right? So like you can't stop that. You can't stop the new McDonald's, which has very few humans, right? Working their new concept, right? Well, the drive-through concept.
The biggest opportunity for any sort of regulation is going to be when these robots start interacting with humans.
They already interact with humans. I mean,
Like if you're talking in a healthcare situation, if it's not just moving, dirty clothes around or, soiled, whatever, but if it actually starts picking people up or moving people around or anything like that.
Oh, okay. I agree. There are some scenarios where it's actually caring for an individual. I do completely agree with you that there will be more debate and probably more regulatory conversation happening.
And it really comes, there's a lot of like medical equipment that has robotics in it. Like think of a hospital bed and how many directions it can move. It doesn't think what it needs to do on its own and do it, but
What's interesting here, guys,
I think that's totally different than a humanoid robot that's totally autonomous doing a job. I think it's not even a...
Depends on how autonomous it is. Like if it's told that, like a bed that you push a button and it says, okay, we're raising the bed. If you tell a robot, hey, we need this person flipped over, that's a task that's a mechanical thing.
We're not talking about the same thing.
I think we're splitting hairs. I see both sides. I definitely see both sides, but I think the mere fact that Jordan is bringing this up means that it will be a conversation that will be had. We can debate how far the regulatory conversation will go for each of these use cases, but Jordan's right. If he's thinking about it, don't think for a millisecond that people whose job it is to cause problems won't also be thinking about this, right? Risk management, it's going to happen. The conversations will happen. I don't believe it will be a major roadblock to any of this. Now, you could, autonomous driving is a whole different world. Like that, I think, to me, is the big... Because when you're talking about machines that carry humans that weigh tens of thousands of pounds that move at 50 miles an
hour down the street towards other humans at 60 miles an hour. That seems like a regulatory issue.
That seems like a major one. And I'm actually kind of shocked where that's being tested, that it's being allowed to the degree that it even is. But I'm not concerned about that here. But guys, I think we're not financial advisors and we're not, you know, making predictions for you guys to invest in. But this, for me, like I said, I've been investing for 35 plus years. This is by far, I think, the most exciting thing that I have seen in decades as an investor. In fact, the last time I was kind of this excited for a sector play, one of my friends and co-founders of a company, I'll never forget the street we were walking down. And this is an engineer, and he spent 5 minutes explaining to me just how large cloud computing was going to be. And I literally went to my computer and I bought a massive amount of Amazon. And I think it was at like, this is pre-split, like $70-something a share. And I held it for the past 9 years, okay? Now, that person was Jordan when we had ticker tags in the early days. And I don't think Jordan went and bought Amazon today. And to this, I know you've had Amazon on and off through that period, but it was because of Jordan that I went in as deep as I went on Amazon. And I still hold those shares today. And it is one of the biggest gainers over the past decade for me. And I was just like, it's just made so much sense. It was almost like a train that was coming that you just could not stop. And he was so clear in his conviction about that. And yet you still didn't like go all in on Amazon the way I did at the time. But I feel I have even more conviction about this, because at the time there was a grouping of people that, and Jordan, you remember this, that really thought that cloud computing wasn't going to take over the way it did. They thought that there would be this resistance from on-premise, and that cloud, it was like a cloud versus on-premise. I don't really see any debate here long-term for people that understand how quickly humanoid engineering has come in the last 18 months. And by the way, when I read the comments on the Optimus videos on YouTube and TikTok, it is so clear to me, people are so skeptical. They're not seeing what we see. We've seen behind the curtain. It's real, guys. It is not a choreographed thing. This is absolutely real. This is happening. Humanoids are taking over the earth. That is going to happen, at least in terms of commercialized and industrialized applications. There's no stopping the fact that we will have millions to tens of millions, I believe hundreds of millions of humanoids working around the globe over the next 10 to 20 years. We can debate how quickly it will happen. We can debate who the companies will be that will deploy the majority of those humanoids. The thesis here is that Tesla will be a leader, at least a top three manufacturer of humanoids. But it's, for, as far as I'm concerned, this is happening, and I'm laser focused on how I'm going to make money off it over the next 10 to 20 years, because it's so clear to me that the rest of the world doesn't believe it yet. And that there is the arb opportunity. The fact that I know that something is going to happen and the majority of people just don't believe it because it's so different than anything we've ever seen in our lifetime.
It's so, so science fiction-y. It doesn't seem like it could possibly be real. And that's where I think that the difference, and not everybody believes it. And if you're as convinced as Chris is, how could you not invest in it?
Yeah. And I'm even going to try, and I don't know if this is doable, Dave, but when we're going to have a bunch of humanoid episodes this next year. And one that we're working on right now is the private company that we're investing in that's been developing a humanoid for the past 8 years. we are going to do a couple episodes with the founder of that company. We're going to tour and show you guys kind of deep insight into how that humanoid is evolving, and that's going to market next year. I would love to create like a humanoid SPV for people that, I don't know how we can legally do this without pitching people, but I would love our like followers to be able to legally invest, not just in Tesla, but to have some, you know, be able to invest kind of in early stage humanoid companies like we are, because we're playing both sides, right? We're playing the smaller humanoid company that I think will be worth billions within a few years. And we're also playing Tesla, which I think will be worth $10 trillion in 7 years. Now, I actually think we might make more money off of our small startup humanoid company just because the valuation is so small. But with levered options, and I plan to lever myself up in Tesla quite a bit over the next 2 years. I'm hoping Tesla stays low the next 6 months, because I don't want to do it yet. But I'm planning to lever up, and I can't wait. I really hope Tesla stays low the next 6 months, because it's all about the humanoid trade for me, and nothing exciting is going to happen with the Tesla optimists in the next 6 months. We might get another video 4 or 5 months from now, 6 months from now, but you're not going to hear that.
No, I don't expect a huge push. I don't think we're going to see much. And everything that we've seen so far from Tesla is just a little bit at a time. We're just seeing a video here. During their next AI day, we'll see what progress they've made to this point. But yeah, I'm not expecting, I think it's still in the R&D
phase. We're not anywhere near the manufacturing phase yet.
We're not for Tesla, but you know, so Jordan, our humanoid is going into full
field. Well, yeah, you're right. I was talking about Tesla.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Tesla. Yeah. Yeah. They're about a year behind. And by the way, they could probably, with what I saw, they're probably, if they wanted to push it out quicker, they probably could. I don't think they will, because with Tesla, the stakes are way too big, right? Like the eyeballs on them are way too big. There's too much. They don't need to push something out prematurely.
Their test scenario is to push these things into their factories, right? To where, you know, some of these other smaller companies, they're trying to work with companies that either have factories or warehouses or whatever.
And I think that's a good point, Jordan. I think something to remember here is I went over 10 job professions of likely 200 that are ripe for humanoids. The reality is that I think Tesla can meet that 1.5 million humanoids in service with a single profession. If they just deployed humanoids in manufacturing lines.
Right. Yeah. So that's right.
We don't need to have them in healthcare. We don't need to have them as security guards. We don't need to have them
as not spreading it across a bunch of industries, at least at first, then they can keep all of that revenue, right?
Did I see somewhere that Tesla is actually hiring a human to oversee robots in one of their factories? I think that they're actually already putting some of the humanoid robots to use in probably very isolated test cases, but I think that's happening already at Tesla.
I think you're right, Dave. And listen, I could have thrown up a much larger number than $10 trillion and said it with conviction today. But at some point, it just seems too ludicrous to others. I didn't want to come off like that. The $10 trillion number, I think, is really approachable by 2030.
I've made my notes on what you were talking about today. Are you going to tweet this somewhere so that anyone who write down everything you said will have a reference point and something they can look back at in 5 years and say, okay, here's how close he was.
Yes. I follow my Twitter. In the next week, I'm going to be tweeting out a thread that will document this entire thesis. So follow at Chris Camillo and Dumb Money TV. You know, Dumb Money TV will probably retweet it. So, yeah, listen, guys, this is so critical. As an investor, we don't come across opportunities like this every year. I think they come around every 5 to 10 years. Certainly, cloud computing was a big one. Not that opportunity is necessarily over, AI. Listen, AI.
AI is
a big one. That, here's the difference with the AI guys. AI came and the market armed it out so quick with NVIDIA because, you know, NVIDIA and SMCI, like they armed it out so quick. Not that there's not more room for some of these pure AI chip companies. There could be. They could 5X from here. But this is one where we're going to have a little bit more time, right? Because there's massive hardware involved. We're talking about actually having to produce hundreds of thousands of these humanoids, deploy them, test them. It won't move as quickly as the pure AI thing happened earlier this year, where all of a sudden every cloud computing company wants to develop their AI and there's an arms race for chips.
Yeah.
And by the way, this will benefit chips as well, but I'm not exactly sure. And this is something that I want to ask next month when we do our humanoid episode in person. I want to ask the founder of our company what type of chipsets, right, these things are using, who the beneficiaries would be there. From my conversations with him, he was telling me that there really weren't any super expensive parts except for like the joint, what do you call the joint thing? It's like
actuator.
Yeah, so as far as like the chipsets are concerned, you know, your real expensive chipsets are going to be in the computers that are doing all of the training and all of that stuff.
Correct. Which are
all they're actually on board are going to be less expensive chipsets.
Yeah. So the chipsets that are driving AI development generally this is just a part of that, right? Because there's some specialization here with humanoid AI, but the reality is it's just piggybacking on the AI train. So a lot of the hype that we had for humanoids last year was pre-AI. That's what's so crazy. Like, we were just as excited about this in 2022. And now when you overlay AI and how much quicker these humanoids can be trained and adopted and how many use cases, guys, I really can't wrap my head around. Like, what I really mean this, change is the ultimate opportunity for an investor, right? When there's massive change happening in the world, that's when investors have the most amount of opportunity for gains. And there's never been a change like this. This is like the birth of the internet, right? The birth of AI.
It's like the birth of the internet. It's like the invention of the iPhone. There's like these key moments that happened in the progression of technology and the adoption of technology. And like AI, you're not putting the genie back in the bottle once it's out.
But Dave, the thing is, we've seen AI-driven applications that are software, and very few of them have barriers to entry. Very few of them have moats. Some of them have exclusive data or exclusive content or exclusive distribution, which is kind of like a moat. But for the most part, Silicon Valley does not even know how to value all of these AI companies because we're unsure if there's any moat to their business. Humanoids have massive moats, okay? Think about this. Manufacturing millions to tens of millions of these humanoids, being able to service them, right? Being able to repair them, being able to deploy them at scale, being able to warranty them. How about the cost involved? I want to remind you guys that my projection had a cost of $60 billion at a cost of $40,000 a piece. So Tesla needs to raise $60 billion in order to manufacture the 1.5 million Optimus robots. How many companies can quickly raise $60 billion? There are massive moats, so many advantages of scale here. How many companies can dominate this market? More than one. It's not just Tesla, okay? But I don't know how you don't look at this space and think that Tesla is so far above any other potential competitor. Yeah. With Elon's ability to take on risk, to move at lightning speed, to put out an imperfect product, because that's what you have to do. You have to put out an imperfect product. That's okay in this case, and just iterate and learn. I don't think, I feel like this is everything that Tesla's ever done was for this moment, not for cars.
I agree.
And,
I agree.
And by the way,
that's why Tesla is my number one holding, because not because I wanted to invest in a car company. It is all the other things, and robotics and humanoid is at the very top of that list.
By the way, I don't even think it's about energy. Like, I think Tesla has a great energy business, but I don't think the moats are nearly as large with their energy business as they are with this business, because this is bringing together the AI that Tesla has access to, obviously, you know, the almost decade long that they've been working on autonomous driving that they are now applying to the humanoid AI, right? How many companies have that? How many companies have the manufacturing capacity globally that Tesla is building out, and the expertise that they're building out on how to scale out that type of manufacturing? How many companies have the battery tech also that they happen to have been forced into for their automotive business, right?
Well, and the learning behind building a factory and then re-optimizing a factory and changing the way they built. Like, they learned so much from automotive of how not to build a car. Like, their initial like cluster of a manufacturing process was I think very beneficial to the robot division, because now they know, well, from day one, this has to be a scalable operation. We have to just replace anything that's going to be a problem for us.
But how many companies have the ability to instantly raise insane amounts of capital from retail investors when they have something exciting than Tesla? Tesla, I think, could raise that $60 billion in 2 days from retail investors without ever going to a bank, okay? How many companies can do that? Just one. As soon as they actually have this ready to deploy and share their plan with Tesla investors, we'll finance them, right? Like, absolutely we would. So there are a lot of moving pieces here. And from my sight line, Tesla has everything required, and very few companies do, but Tesla is perfectly positioned for this. Anytime you hear Elon talk about the biggest threat, existential threat to humanity being population collapse, don't believe him. Because what he's really doing is planting the seeds for his Optimus humanoid. He is planting the seeds so that when Optimus is ready, he can say, you know what? We've been so focused on this existential threat to humanity the past 5 years. I have the solution to it. We don't need to worry anymore. He knows that. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's not concerned about population collapse because he knows exactly how to solve the problem. He's just planting.
He's building the solution.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I've seen through that from day one. The first time it came out of his mouth, I said, he's just planting the seed for Optimus. That's all he's doing. It's smart. And he's right. He's right. Without humanoids, it is a major problem. It's a major problem. But with humanoids, it's not a problem at all. In fact, to some extent, you can make a case that you want the population to rapidly decline after we have optimized humanoids, okay? There's really no reason at that point for us to have that many humans, because with our ability to scale out intelligence, productivity, efficiency, to basically accommodate everything that we need as humans, we no longer need humans to work in the bottom part of the pyramid, because that's what we've needed for generations. When we say we need lots of humans, we don't need
that.
Them up here. We need them down here.
I don't agree with that.
Up here.
I don't agree with that, Chris. Even, I mean,
how do you not agree?
I don't agree with that.
How?
Human population drives growth, and it's not just from the production side. It's also from the demand side, too.
Okay, but no. But why? Okay, but the demand side is only to fill the production side of all the humans, right? So tell me, in a world where we had near perfect ability to accommodate the vast majority of human tasks that exist today, at least, because we'll create new ones, right? So we'll create however many humans we have, we will then figure out what to do with them to make our lives even better. It could be.
I think you're getting beyond your skis right now. I don't think we can see that far into the future and what that's going to do. You're getting into like a philosophical debate about.
I don't think it's philosophical. What would we need the humans to, like, what we need them to. We were going to have humans. We're going to have plenty.
No, he produced humans just to work, right? I mean, at a certain point.
Well, if you think about how the economy works, you have humans who produce stuff so that humans can buy stuff. And it's just an endless cycle. If we had fewer people doing the producing stuff and enough people consuming stuff to have these robots have something to do, enter the world of Wall-E, where you're just like sitting around watching.
We're going to have a concentration of wealth even more severe than it is today. That's a negative of it. The bottom line is we're moving to universal income. That's happening, right? Everyone's going to get paid. That's inevitable. That's inevitable from this, right? Because once we eventually the job displacement will happen. It always has happened. It always will happen. And it will continue to happen. And when it happens, all it means is that the savings, the added productivity and efficiencies will get redeployed to those humans in various ways, whether indirectly through Medicare and government services or more directly through universal basic income. That's an inevitability. That's coming. I think we all see that, right? So our line of thinking that we need to have 500 million humans working at factories and doing monotonous tasks so they could make the money to continue to buy stuff, it's irrelevant in this case. We'll have humans that will be doing other things, right? People will be doing more, they'll be doing better things with their time. They'll still be working. We'll still have new jobs, right? The jobs of tomorrow will exist. Right. They just won't be the jobs of today. And the jobs of tomorrow will exist to improve our lives, to make our lives even easier and better. And listen, I think we spend a lot of time focused on the fact that, you know, life isn't as good as it used to be. It's really easy to say that here in the U.S. when we're at the top of the pyramid. But on a global level, if we can figure out a way for everybody to eat and everybody to have shelter and everybody to have some sort of health care, right, as a result of this, and to have humanoids helping, you know, the bottom quarter of humanity, we're going to raise the bar. Maybe not for us, but the bar is going to get raised for the majority of you. We just don't think about that part of humanity, right, here. But this will improve, I think, quality of life for the majority of humans that exist when this happens. I know it's a little philosophical, but at what point can you go back and say, let's take social media aside, okay? At what point can you go back in history and say, man, maybe the nuclear technology too. So take that off the table, and you could say, hey, man, that technology, we'd be doing so much better today as humans if it was never invented, right? Like, it's really hard to say that, and I don't think you'll say that about humanoids.
No, and I think that as much as AI is going to drive forward and probably shift where humans, you know, the thinking jobs are also going to be augmented and changed because of AI. The physical jobs are going to be changed because of humanoids. So there's going to be this like place in the middle that we're going to find things for humans to do, I guess. I don't know.
Agreed. So that's it. That's all right. Tesla at $10 trillion. By the way, I've never been a Tesla boy. Like, I just never been a fanboy of Tesla ever.
But you are now. You
I'm ripe to become one. I still want to kind of see. Listen, I don't know how I don't become one, quite honestly, because you can't stop this train. And I don't think Elon, I've heard enough from Elon to know that he's going full steam ahead with this project, and there's nothing that's going to slow him down. So at this point, just go ahead and call me a fanboy, because I have to be. This is.
It's too big of a change to the economy of the world.
The Tesla situation and, I'm sorry, not the Twitter situation with Elon derailing this for any reason.
Jordan, that is like my number one concern. Yeah, right. Absolutely. My number one concern is that Elon completely loses his mind or starts to spin worse than he has the last 18 months. and something devastating happens to the brand, something devastating happens to Elon, that ultimately causes just a lack of confidence in the company and its ability.
Right, that's the other thing. So is this a hit by the bus type situation in that the only person that is strong enough to actually pull this off is Elon Musk? Is there any other leadership at the company that can, you know, do something like this?
That has always been the rub for me, Jordan, with Tesla, because it doesn't seem like Elon has ever, you know, done the Tim Cook thing that Steve Jobs did by pulling in a team, a Tim Cook, and giving him that sort of, you know, power.
Although they did, really they run. Did.
I'm sure there were talented people there, but he sure doesn't, you know, bring them up. And
he brought he brought a whole bunch of people on stage, not any in the recent shows, but was it Power Day or AI Day? I think it was Power Day when they kind of tried to show how deep the bench was by having different product leads presenting their new features, their new stuff.
Jordan, I think that, like I said, I'm sure there are plenty of talented people at Tesla, but you don't have that one. It's not like he's bringing up this overarching leader behind it.
And I think that at some point they need to have like a Tim Cook just in the wings. But
also, Dave, this
they may
is
already
unlike,
they're just not being public about it.
But also, unlike Tesla, this is a massive logistics and servicing play too. And I think the one area where Tesla has maybe been weak is in the servicing of their vehicles as they're starting to scale. This is the type of thing where Apple just executed flawlessly when they got so big that they realized, you know what? We need to put as much effort into servicing, how we handle Apple Care, our store experience, right? The Apple Genius experience and all of that. And you know, Apple's one of the few companies where if you have an issue, you could actually call up their customer service and like speak to a human relatively quickly, as long as it's not after the holiday season. And they've just done an amazing job there. And Tesla has to do the same thing if they want to start deploying eventually tens of millions of Optimus humanoids at thousands of companies around the world that are going to rely on Tesla being able to service, maintain, right, replace those humanoids for their core business needs. So that would be an area of concern for me. Just generally companies being afraid to work with Elon and choosing a competitor over Tesla, I think is a risk here. But I will say this, guys, a big part of my thesis is that the demand is going to exceed supply of humanoids by such a large measure that even if half of the world won't work with Elon or doesn't like something about the Optimus, they're going to be forced into it because you're just going to get a humanoid wherever you can. There might be five or six, it looks like, leading commercialized humanoid manufacturers in the early years, meaning like 2025 to 2027. It looks like there could be half a dozen. There could be a dozen from my research that are able to actually manufacture in some relative form of capacity. Like, I don't think they'll be able to manufacture as quickly as Tesla will, but the demand is going to exceed supply.
Yeah, it's like even if 2/3 of industry decided we don't like Elon and we don't want to do business with him, there's still enough demand to turn Tesla into a $10 billion company.
$10 trillion
company.
Yeah. And I think there will be other companies that will be valued at tens to hundreds of billions of dollars because of this humanoid movement. In some cases, perhaps trillions. I think there's room for multiple $1 trillion to potentially multiple 10 plus $1 trillion businesses as a result of humanoids. If you move forward to 2035, 2040, I mean, guys, this industry is so large, we're essentially talking at that point about displacing a large portion of human workers. And all of that money is going to be concentrated. It's going to create meaningful political issues. I'm not, you know, you can't avoid that. We need another show about this, Dave, but I don't know whether, no matter where you sit in the political spectrum, I don't know how taxation doesn't go up meaningfully for those at the up. Like you're seeing this talk about wealth tax. You're seeing that you're seeing these things in California where if you sell a house now over what, $4 million or $5 million, you pay an additional tax over $10 million, $15
million. Well, think about this, Chris. So like, let's say you get some displacement in the workforce. Now all of those wage taxes, like there's no taxes on the wage that you're paying for a robot.
So Jordan, I think we will replace those taxes with new forms of taxation somewhere along the food chain.
Yeah, right. And they'll find a way. You know, Chris is talking about a sub-$100,000 a year robot lease rental kind of thing. They're going to have taxes on that $100,000, multiply it across all of the millions of robots. So that's a different form of taxation. But don't worry, the government's going to find a way to take them.
Well, I'm going to remind everyone because you guys watching
Tesla, when they're using it themselves, and it's an internal usage. You don't tax a company for their own.
All I'm saying, guys, is that before the internet, when the internet came around and people started, remember Dave, people started ordering products cross state through the internet. There used to be no taxation. You would order anything in the anything that you ordered off the internet. There were no taxes. What do we have now? Almost everything on the internet.
There's a couple states without taxes that you can order from Amazon without paying sales tax.
It's going to get figured out. The taxes will come. There's no reason to debate how the taxes will come. Governments will figure it out. I do think that universal basic income is a guarantee. It's just a matter of how quickly it comes and what form, what does it look like, what is it called? Will it be hidden as something else, right? But the change is coming, but don't be afraid because the change means opportunity. I mean, the biggest opportunity of our lifetime as investors is coming. And
as long as you see the change coming before anyone else, or even before the majority, you're kind of in a good position, especially when it comes to like finding the companies that you think are going to benefit most from that change. And I'm really excited to have Chris joining me as a Tesla fanboy. You can come over and enjoy a cyber beer at my house. These just came in.
Happy to. You know, I had to be true to myself. I always was a bit jealous and wanted to be a Tesla fanboy, but I never was, and I couldn't force it on myself. I just never had a passion for the automotive business like that. And I never really believed in autonomous vehicles in terms of the timeline. Now, I never believed his timeline for autonomous vehicles. I still don't believe it today. We might have autonomous vehicles in 3 or 4 years, but we might not get them for 30 or 40 years. I don't know. I have zero conviction in the mass deployment of autonomous vehicles happening anytime soon, but
a wild card, and that's government regulation.
Yes. And I've always felt that way, and that's always been the rub with me and Tesla, because I always knew that the big value for Tesla would be in autonomous vehicles because of their ability to push their cost down on their vehicle production and be the ultimate winner by blending their form of autonomous AI with low cost production, with their ability to raise capital and manufacture those vehicles that scale cheaper than anyone else and everything else Tesla's doing. I felt that if autonomous happened, that Tesla would be the big winner, but I never felt that autonomous would happen anytime soon. Therefore, I couldn't really be a Tesla fanboy to the degree that so many of you others were. But this gets me on board because I know Tesla can do this. I know they can pull it off. I know they can. As long as I wish Elon would just get rid of X, get rid of Twitter, because this is everything. This is everything. Elon, he won't do it. I know he won't. And he's going to make so much money off of this. He can continue to fund
X for as long as he wants. If the Tesla thing goes as you're imagining it will. And
yeah,
I also, you know, Grok, have you talked to Grok on your X app?
I haven't talked to Grok yet. I'm not ready for a new AI. I almost did, but I just didn't want to. Not yet.
See, for me, I actually find it easier because you're already in the X app, and just to have that tab down there to, when I was in DC and I wanted to know something like, oh, has the JFK flame ever gone out? Yeah, Grok gave me an answer immediately that I would have had to open up a whole separate app and log into my ChatGPT account, and it's just kind of nice to have it all in one. And if X ever became a finance app the way that he's talked about, I don't think that it's important. I think that it's possible to be a very useful app as long as he doesn't.
I just wish that Elon would be more comfortable delegating actual power to other people. I wish he brought in really strong leaders, hyped
them up.
That
he wasn't like the head of like 8 different companies right now.
Yeah, like, Elon is, it's because of Elon that Tesla's in this position, but it's also because of Elon that they could just, it could all fall apart. It's just,
you need to watch the John Oliver that he just did Elon Musk as his feature story in the last episode. Mm-hmm. You need to watch that. And the origins of the Optimus robot, they run that hilarious clip where it's the dude in a spandex suit dancing.
Yes.
And John has his own spandex suit robot and announced that he's starting a robot company. So yeah, you need to watch that.
Someone in our comments is like, crypto's mooning. You're not in on it. Oh, guys, I had some Ethereum. I've been exiting the last handful of NFTs that I had into this liquidity. Listen, it's not just NFTs that are mooning, guys. I mean, look at SMCI, dude. That's one of the biggest positions in my portfolio is Super Microcomputer. Celsius is as well. Amazon is as well. NVIDIA is as well, guys. Still, so like there are a lot of, I mean, it's been a good month. It's been a good rebound month, couple months here. And I'm levered again. Did I tell you guys that? I'm 70% levered. Yeah. I didn't tell you?
I don't think you told us that.
Yeah, I've been levering up for the past 6 or 7 weeks. So, which the timing has been nice.
I've been levered at the right time.
Yeah, so I'm back up to 70% leverage, which, wow. you know Ameritrade or Schwab, now owns Ameritrade. You know they love that because the margin interest that I'm paying them.
Yeah.
Dude, and I don't understand at that level of margin interest, why are they not sending me like tickets to Mavs games? Like I need to get some stuff.
They sent me a Christmas card. Did you get one of those?
Dude,
you have a personal advisor, and they'll send you a Christmas card. And if you talk to them, they'll lower your margin rates. But
well, I already have
still
done
a little bit over whatever the rate is, and rates are still high. So they're not going to give away free money, but they will reduce it to as little as like a half a point over.
At this rate, I'm going Something to be like paying that. Like mid six figures a year in margin interest to Schwab. I mean, I want some Mavs tickets. Come on, if they're watching, if anyone's watching. Can you please send me 4 Mavs tickets? Because I'm so cheap, I will pay crazy money to borrow on margin because I know I'm hopefully making more money than that in the market. But the thought of paying
you'll spend $500,000 to borrow money, but you won't buy $200 sport tickets.
No, that just seems insane. Paying $1,000 to bring my family of 4 to a basketball game with seats I could reasonably see the court in. I can't do that. And like, I feel like the person I'm paying margin interest to should do that for me. I don't know. Maybe I'm being unrealistic. But that's all.
All right. That's going to do it. Thank you guys so much.
Wait, Dave.
We went way over today. We're over an hour already.
All right, but one more thing. I want to tease our next episode. I want to lock you guys into it. There are some exciting holiday trades. I know we're getting really close to the holiday here. But I have some really interesting data on some things that are moving for the holiday season and are also investable. So can we please do a holiday episode of how to make money off what people are buying for the holiday season? Because like, I want to share some of the data with the community. And by the way, I've been off of Discord the last couple weeks. I promise, guys, I'll get in there. I'll share some of this data in Discord in the next few days. So I'll share it there, some of it first.
All right, well, Christmas Eve is Sunday, so we have to do it this week. So are you guys
this
available
Sunday?
Thursday?
Is that this Sunday? Is Christmas?
Yes, Christmas is on Monday. 1 week from yesterday.
That's insane.
Okay.
So we're going to get a last show of the year in on Thursday the 21st at 11 Central.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Everyone available? Everyone at home? Are you available? Give us a thumbs up if you're available and send a comment that says you'll be there. And subscribe and tell your two best friends to also subscribe because we have to get up to 100,000 and we only have one more show to do it. And we're still 1,400 subscribers away. So
or just,
I don't think we're going to do
it. Subscribe your wife or something or your girlfriend or
anyone you know. That's why I want people to just go open up their texting app and whoever their top two texts are, these are people that will understand and they'll go ahead and click the link and click subscribe. That's all we're asking. Send your two to three top texting people, hey, you should really subscribe to this channel. They're trying to hit 100K by the end of the year.
Thank you.
That may be a violation of YouTube's terms of service. I don't know, but just go for it. We don't care. We're Dumb Money. We'll see you next on Thursday. Hey,